Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. Coming up later in the program, Suzanne Muchen will be here. You know, she's the co-host of The Big Payoff, and she's following up on an investigation into salons in New York City. Sounds odd, but it applies here in Chicago as well. So we will talk to her about that. Andrew Herman from DNA Info comes by too, and he's got a story of a guy who just liked to make cookies, and he was making cookies, talking about it at a health club he goes to, and it turns out the guy working out next to him was an investor, and now he's opening up a cookie shop in the West Loop. So that's coming up. But we start Tuesdays with John Najarian, the from Option Monster. You can follow him at Option Monster on Twitter and see him on CNBC as well. John, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Stephen. Thank you, sir.
You know, I told anyone who would listen, John, and no one does, I said, if we could just get to March, everything's going to be fine on Wall Street.
Well, and like a lion, as they say, yeah. It certainly seems like that today. We've got nearly a 2% rally across the board. That rally, of course, coming, I guess, primarily on the heels of Dudley, who's a voting member of the FOMC, saying that he thinks inflation is subdued to the point where there certainly is no, it's not necessary to have any series of rate increases. Now, that's one person speaking. We both know they speak frequently, the Fed folks do, but this one was pretty close to a policy speech because he's giving it in China, or gave it, rather, yesterday in China. And that was really a primary catalyst for this big rally today.
I'm no expert, but I did read that March and April tend to be it's a string where the S&P 500 does pretty well. I mean, one of the better periods of the year traditionally for the S&P.
Yeah, well, when you look at your portfolio today, folks, you're going to see just what Steve talked about in spades in your portfolio. I certainly hope you do, because it's hard to find too many stocks that are down. Other than gold, which is down about 0.8%, you look across the board, American Airlines is up 2.25%. Yahoo is up 2.7%. FireEye is up 2.3%. I mean, I'm looking across the board, various sectors from biotech to high tech, and I see even energy stocks acting very well today.
We had some statistics out today. Manufacturing number came in at 49.5, which was above expectations, but still below the 50 contraction expansion level. So I guess good news there. Car maker numbers seem to be pretty good. Chrysler up 12% in February. Ford up better than 20%. So those would seem to be encouraging numbers.
Yeah, certainly that the consumer that has saved lots of money on gasoline is out spending it on something other than just experiences. That's what so many people are focused on, is that we're all just spending it on experiences.
That's the buzz, isn't it, of 2016?
Yeah.
I know. I had someone on last week talking about that. Even the president of Iran is talking about getting Western companies now coming into his company, his country, to start building cars. So we'll see where that goes. Also, Super Tuesday. I love politics. I'll be home tonight with a bowl of popcorn, watching it all come in. And does what happens tonight, do you think that will be felt in the markets tomorrow at all, or is all of that already factored in?
I would say unless it is a surprise, unless you saw Rubio, Cruz, or Kasich do extremely well against Trump, or Bernie Sanders against Hillary Clinton, that it's pretty much playing out the way the polls indicated that it would, and that is that Ms. Clinton and Mr. Trump are going to be the front runners and likely the nominees for each party.
So
if that plays out, I don't think Wall Street reacts to it at all, because that's already the known rather than the unknown.
From what I read, if Rubio, Cruz, or Kasich do well, Wall Street would like that. If Sanders does well tonight, Wall Street probably wouldn't like that as much.
That's very true. I mean, a lot of folks don't focus on the idea that Hillary Clinton is tied pretty tightly to Wall Street. Bernie Sanders has exploited that when he's competed against her hard here And obviously, Mr. Trump is also pretty hard against Wall Street, believe it or not. He wants to do away with carried interest and a number of other things. So you have a Democrat that's really siding with Wall Street, that's leading on the Democratic side, and a Republican who is acting more like a Democrat, going after Wall Street and trying to get rid of some of these sweetheart deals for taxes that they've enjoyed for the last several decades.
He really is an enigma, isn't he? Because some of the positions he takes are traditionally Democratic positions.
Yeah, well, there are many of us who would say that Mr. Trump is, like Mr. Bloomberg, a Democrat in Republican clothing. I mean, that he is a Democrat.
No, wait. No one wants to dress like a Republican, John. That can't be right.
Well, that's probably true, because then you wear dark suits and red ties.
Right.
That's it. Yeah, you're right. I think the people are kind of put off a little by how dramatically the election is changing people's opinions of what is a Democratic point of view and what is a Republican point of view. And that's likely to continue right up until the actual election in November.
And, you know, we're seeing that with the whole Apple situation as well. But, all right, we got about 45 seconds. Do you have a stock tip for us today?
Well, we talked experiences just a moment ago, and one place that does that in spades are casinos, of course. What happens there stays there, or so they say. And MGM, Wynn, and Las Vegas Sands are absolutely on fire. They've been that way for several days. We've continued to own them, and we've added to positions. We see a lot of institutional money flowing into those names. So they're up over 5% again today. I think you could wait, but you could get back into these if they have that eventual pullback, because it seems like people have finally figured out that many of these were way too cheap.
That's John Najarian. By my read now, the Dow's up 302 points, the NASDAQ up 101. So once again, the Dow jumps up during our conversations. No one's surprised by that, John.
That's right. Well, that's your optimism, Stephen. It's doing that.
Great to talk to you. I can't wait for next week.
Likewise. Thank you, sir.
Well, 22, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman from DNA Info is here as well. He comes along on Tuesdays to talk about openings and closings. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
Little Rolling Stones, because the world is changing, right? They announced their free show in Havana coming up later this month.
Awesome.
And I was just talking to John Najarian about the president of Tehran talking about bringing Western companies in to help build cars in Iran. So, and you're laughing because we usually talk about vinyl during the breaks. And,
right.
Mick Jagger's son, James.
Right. He's
on vinyl.
He's on this HBO show, Vinyl, about the record industry. And we were trying to figure out who he was in the last few weeks. And I finally, I used Google.
Did you? The Google machine?
Yes, Google machine told me. And now I'm watching the show. And every time I see him, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Mick Jagger's kid.
I think it's okay for us to talk about that show because it's about the business, the record business.
Absolutely.
All right. I want to talk about this warm belly fella.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about businesses that are opening and closing. Joe De La Pena has a great story. It's a cookie shop. It's opening what? It's beyond the West Loop, or it is the West Loop neighborhood, I guess.
Well, 1148 West Monroe. Warm belly gourmet cookies. And, you know, we've always talk about small businesses, and people wonder, how do I open a small business? And sometimes it's a real circuitous route.
You join a health club.
Right.
Well, this guy talk about, he's been all over the place.
Yeah, so his the actual guy who knows how to make the cookies, he's 34 years old, Joe De La Pena. And he worked in finance, and then he was a high school English teacher, and then he got a job as a marketing guy in social media and ended up as a caterer. And obviously he's got some chops on how to bake stuff. And he was at a gym in the West Loop one day, and he met a trader.
Yeah.
My name Francis Wisniewski. They got to talking. The trader said, "Hey, well, you should cater my company Christmas party." They got together. They loved the food, and then all of a sudden, the trader said, "Hey, why don't we go into business?" And one guy's the money guy, and the other guy's got the skills, and they're up and running and making some pretty odd cookies over there on
right.
the west side. You know, they
peanut butter and jelly filled cookies.
Yeah.
Come on,
yeah, strawberries and cereal, Mexican hot chocolate. They have one with meat and cheese in it, but it's really interesting how businesses get off the ground.
Well, it's all about connections, right? And here he is sweating next to some other guy
and
talking about it. You've left out the part that the guy was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire once.
Right.
He's been a reviewer on Check Please. So This is a guy who just bounced around, and now Joe De La Pena's got his own cookie shop.
You know, he keeps trying, and he's tried a bunch of different routes, and finally, evidently, has found something that he's all in on, and making cookies, and now he's got a shop. So
good for him. He's
cool.
Over by Google headquarters, right? So
right.
They've got some foot traffic there.
Yeah.
All right, let's wish them well. Let's go to the south side now. Bronzeville, maybe, where the IBEW has purchased an old Chicago school, and it sounds like they might sort of, well, I don't know, revitalize might be overstating it, but give a shot in an arm to the neighborhood.
Well, the story is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, there you rarely hear of any company moving from downtown to 27th and King.
Right.
Right?
And away from, I mean, there's sort of a... The West Loop is the innovative area, but a little south of that is
right.
Plumbers area or the Union area,
yeah.
And IBEW is moving out of there.
So they bought this old Drake School, and that's at 27th and King for $1.5 million. It was one of these schools that was closed by Mayor Emanuel a couple years ago, and they're going to use it for a Union Hall. You know, it's got classrooms and offices and an auditorium. But one of the interesting things that they're going to do is they're going to try to partner with Dunbar High School, which is a couple blocks away, in order to teach teenagers how to become electricians, which is, you know, a fabulous idea. It's a pretty well-paying job. You don't need a college education. And I suppose if you start teaching them as teenagers, you know, they can kind of get a head start on a career.
Right. And they said not that they would guarantee. I think they did say they'd guarantee a few jobs, too.
Yeah. If you can complete the course and, you know, meet their standards, then they need people. When you look at the labor statistics in terms of projections for electricians, it's up quite a bit. You know, up 14% in the next 8 years, they're going to need 85,000 electricians in this country, and they're hard to find, evidently.
So if you meet a guy from the IBEW, buy him a cookie at Warm Belly, and everyone will be happy.
There you go.
Andrew Herman, read more at dnainfochicago.com. Right, is that right, or is it
.com
just...
Chicago.
Right, dnainfo.com
Chicago.
Chicago. Every time I say it, I'm not sure. I'm glad. Thanks for correcting me. We'll take a break, come back. Kim Gordon is in the newsroom. We'll check in with the headlines right after this on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Coming up later in the program, Kathleen Farber. She's the managing director at the Wellesley Group. It's a retainer-based executive search firm. She's been on the program before. And we'll talk about the fact that now when you're trying to find someone to fill a position, it's not like it was a few years ago when you had a lot of fish in that sea. You got to work a little bit harder. And Kathleen is going to say, you might have to listen to this. You might actually have to pick up the phone and make a call. Can you believe it? But first, Suzanne Muchin is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGNplus.com. Suzanne, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Steve.
And so we're talking about, and I tweeted and put on Facebook this commercial that you can see. So check it out. Weigh in on Facebook. But this is a spot for laundry detergent, right? In India.
Yes.
And it's a, well, what, you, tell,
you want me to tell the story?
You go ahead and explain it.
So I'm glad you put it on Facebook, but because part of the reason it's become so popular is that Sheryl Sandberg is all over this as part of her Lean In movement.
Right.
So BBDO, which is a big advertising agency worldwide, takes on this laundry detergent. Ariel is the brand, and creates this storyline to the commercial where a young woman comes in who's a mom and her adult father's sitting in the house as well as her husband. She comes in the door, clearly still on the phone with work. You can tell by what she's saying. She's talking about business. And while she's on the phone, she's also making dinner. She's also ironing and cleaning up her kids' stuff and doing the laundry.
While her husband is...
watching.
Right.
Sitting on the couch and watching. And so the father, who's narrating the ad, is saying to the audience how sorry he is that she's been raised in this way where she thinks that's her job and that her husband's just sitting by watching and that he wants to be a role model for future generations so that men participate more in the household.
Right.
And the hashtag is share the load.
Right. And okay. So this guy learns to do laundry.
So he learns to do laundry, and at the end of the video, dad's doing the laundry. Now, you might think coming into this story, because I cover women in business on this show on Tuesdays, that I would love this.
You'd be saying, woo-hoo, it's about time men get it.
Time.
Right.
Hate it.
You hate it.
Like, I hate this commercial so much, and I have been all over Facebook with my response to it. Now, here's why I hate it. When Sheryl Sandberg posted it, she went right to the guy at BBDO who was behind this and said, thank you so much for getting this message out. And do you know what he said?
What?
He said, Sheryl, you were actually the inspiration for this because you once said publicly that if guys want more sex, they should do more laundry.
Really?
So just sit with that for a minute.
Right.
So really the motivation behind this video, behind this.
So it turns out he's not a loving old man. He's a dirty old man.
Not only that, but turns out that the real message here to men is not help your wife because she's amazing and our society really needs more women in the workforce. The real message behind this is if you help with the laundry, you will have more sex.
Wow.
I mean, really?
Well, so.
And he was very proud. And then if you do the hashtag.
And what did Sheryl Sandberg say?
Share the load. It all becomes a little creepy.
What did she say?
She didn't really respond. She just thinks this message is really great that men should help with the laundry. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, there are ways for men to get involved in the household that would certainly be helpful, but their motivation for doing it actually matters.
Oh, well, that's, I mean, if, you know, if there's, that's a big payoff right there.
Could be a very big payoff right now.
That's,
gives new meaning to lean in.
Yeah,
also.
so we could just keep going here for the whole
segment. Really could.
Because I didn't like it so much because I'm like, okay, fine, beat us up again. We get it. We get it.
Oh, you know? Mean you didn't like the message that was sent
to guys? I didn't like
guys.
the way it was portrayed. You
guilting
know?
You and
yeah, exactly, guilting us. You know, men are bad,
right?
Of course, because my first reaction was, "Well, this doesn't apply to me,"
right?
But I suppose that's every guy's reaction. So maybe it does a little bit more than I thought.
And it's probably not, the laundry is probably just a metaphor for many other things you could be doing around the house, but your motivation for doing them should certainly be a little
bit more pure. Right. I get that. All right. You want me to go get a manicure?
I do. We've been talking about your hands for many weeks.
And then ask the manicurist?
Yeah.
Technician?
Yeah.
How she likes her job and if she's being treated fairly.
I do want you to ask that. And here's why.
I'm not going to do that.
I know you're not.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting because many women do this as a weekly service. There are manicure salons all over the city of Chicago. Most urban areas have them.
By the way, when you started that, you started looking at my fingers.
I was looking at them.
And I hid them. You noticed that, right?
You know, men can get away with lots of things. I actually don't like a manicure on a man. I think, why would you? It says a lot about your kind of persona.
Okay, so.
You want to go back to the story?
Yeah, what were we talking about?
You and your manicure.
No, that's it. I'm done.
So here's what's been going on. Last year, the New York Times did this massive expose on New York nail salons. And many other cities, Chicago among them, were also being accused of this, which is horrible, horrible treatment of the workers, that they were being way underpaid, working in terrible conditions, working overtime. And meanwhile, all of these well-off women are just going to the salon and getting their nails done and leaving as if everything's okay.
Right. I think there's a phrase, we had a guest on before. She calls it willful ignorance.
Exactly. Willful. I love that. Willful ignorance. It's great. So now it's been about 9 months and the reports are now coming back out, just released this week, as to what they actually found in terms of the conditions. And of the 230 salons that they investigated after the initial report, all but 12 had pretty serious violations.
Violations as in not paying their workers?
Working the women 60 hours a week, paying them well under minimum wage, having them purchase their own supplies, you know, gloves.
What are they, teachers?
I mean,
we don't
exactly,
treat them like...
We don't teach our manicures like our teachers.
Right.
But it's really, for me, the purpose of this story is more about all of us who are consumers to just be a bit more conscious. Because if you go into a salon and the manicure is $10, you have to ask yourself the question, how's that possible?
Right. If you're paying so little.
If you're paying so little, are you actually enabling and perpetuating this system that's very immigrant-based, by the way? Are we really doing this willfully?
And so you would have women getting a manicure.
Do a couple things. I think you can, first of all.
Do you talk? You talk to your technician during a manicure?
Do women?
Well,
look, I'm antisocial. You know that. So I'm not great at that kind of chit chat. But In this case, if I looked around and thought something seemed a little creepy, I might ask what seemed like an innocuous question, like, so how do you like working here? I might do that.
So what would happen if they said they don't like it so much? I mean, you're almost asking for information that's going to require some sort of action.
Well, there are websites now. There are places that you can go that if you want to report what you see, that you can go and do that in different cities. And I do think it's our obligation as consumers to go in. If you really are doing this every week and you look around and something isn't right, it's a little bit like if you see something, say something.
It is sort of that confluence of two different rivers, right?
Yes.
You got the wealth and the poverty.
Exactly.
And it's a good point, something to be mindful of. Willful ignorance.
Yes.
I'll ask about that some other time.
Okay, no problem.
Suzanne Muchen, the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that at WGNplus.com. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're at 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion, and thank you for letting us know about that. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Kathleen Farber is in the studio, Managing Director at the Wellesley Group. Kathleen, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. I'm very glad to be here.
Do you remember the last time you were here? Was it like 4 months ago?
It wasn't snowing that day.
No. It's snowing a little bit today. I appreciate you coming in.
Glad to be here.
And so, you know, we were talking about the fact that I just was reading a story about the European Union and that their unemployment rate continues to drop. And it was down last month, and they're very pleased, or they're somewhat pleased, that it's now down to 10.1%. Which
it's all about perspective.
I guess it is. You know, it's been dropping for 2 years, but still it's kind of twice where we are.
Yeah, yeah.
We are at the level now, some people say, where it's almost full employment, mm-hmm. which makes it a little bit harder when you're trying to fill a position at your office.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly true.
And so what is it that, how does it change? How is it different this time, at this time of the year, than it was, say, 3 or 4 years? I mean, how do you handle it differently?
Well, 3 or 4 years ago, we had a fairly high unemployment rate. And we have to also bear in mind that technology has entered the world, and companies became very comfortable being able to put targeted employment information out on the internet, and they received droves of information from very, very highly competent and talented people. And frankly, hiring a few years ago was like shooting fish in a barrel.
Right. Well, I think of when you go to, in Florida or wherever, a seafood restaurant on a lake, and the catfish are all around the pier, you know, and the kids throw the
little
pellets in, and the fish are all over it.
You have your pick. You have your pick of the litter.
There aren't that many fish around anymore.
Well, you've got a couple of things happening. Not only do you still have technology, and companies have become very comfortable using that as a recruiting tool, but baby boomers are retiring. Guess what? We're all getting older.
Right.
And I read a statistic where 10,000 baby boomers are turning 66 every day.
Wow.
Now, not everybody is leaving the workforce, but a vast majority are. So what's happening, our unemployment rate is beginning to drift downward. And you're right. It's sort of at a point where we're at considered full employment. But employers are still using technology as their primary resource. And what you can engage typically in that reactive way are people that are still in transition. And that number has really dramatically decreased.
So you're not finding the person who's sitting at her desk or his desk who might be enticed by an offer because they're not really looking.
They're not really looking. And, you know, I'll tell you, I've been around a long time. I really hate to say, I know I sound a lot younger over the radio, but I've been around a number of decades. And human nature is human nature. And if you are not actively thinking about a job opportunity, chances are you receive that online solicitation, you're going to ignore it.
Right.
It takes a live human being. This is the old-fashioned way, people. Pick up the phone and to be able to talk to that person, engage them, and be able to turn them into a candidate. And that's a highly coveted population of people, non-job seekers. A lot of talent acquisition people like to refer to them as the passive candidate. But today, to engage those people, you really have to do it the old-fashioned way.
Now, can it be a touch tone phone, or does it have to be dial? How far back
are we going? Cell phones would even work. How about that?
But, you know, it's almost what you say. It's interesting to me that the passive employee, almost just because he or she's not looking, is more attractive than the actively looking employee.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been a headhunter for a lot of years. I hate to say this, for nearly 30 years now. And it's interesting, as my slate of candidates in recent years have been a combination of people in transition and people who are gainfully employed.
Right.
The people who are gainfully employed are more likely to make that job change for all the right reasons. They don't have a motivation to leave unless it's the right job. It's going to take their career to the next level. People in transition too quickly want that job to have a job, and that's not always best for the employer.
Well, that makes sense, right? So the person who's in transition, out of work, is a little bit more desperate for a job. So
they are.
Well, this might not be a perfect fit, but I need a job. I'll take this one.
And I'll tell you, I even had a candidate who was in transition that was jazzed. He was going to go meet the client, and he told me, I want the job. I said, well, how do you know? You haven't met anyone yet. You know, but I always have to control those people
right.
and manage those people very differently than my people who are gainfully employed.
Well, it's kind of sad in a way, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
The people who need the help the most are less attracted than the people who aren't looking for
help. Well, the problem is, and I've had a lot of conversations with people in transition, they almost shoot themselves in the foot. Because they are so eager, they are so desperate.
I can do that. I can do that. Right.
You can smell desperation.
Yeah.
Where people who are gainfully employed, you know, have a different attitude. They're approaching it with a different mindset, a different energy. And again, if they're going to make that move, it's for all the right reasons.
They turn out to be better employees than the people in transition? I mean, does it bear out?
Well, I think they're going to be there more for the long haul.
Right.
And certainly, if you're accepting a job for the wrong reasons, chances are it's not going to work out real well for you in the long run.
We need to take a break here, but I want you to come back in the near future, and I want to talk about, I'm interested in the long haul.
Because, oh, no, absolutely.
You know, people now taking jobs for 18 months, 2 years. Older people, it's harder to, aren't often hired, but they seem to be the ones who would be there for the long haul. So I'm interested in that conflict, and we'll kick that around the next time.
Yeah, or maybe we'll talk about baby boomers.
We'll talk about baby boomers. Kathleen Farber is the managing director at the Wellesley Group. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Steve.